Okay, so I'm assuming this will be a shorter than usual class. I don't have as many slides, and this was the logical place to stop rather than start a new topic, as people, I expected low attendance because people probably are taking off already for the break. Okay, so just a quick recap. Last time we were talking about paging. Okay, so paging is a memory management scheme that eliminates a lot of the restrictions that contiguous memory allocation has, which is it results in fragmentation. Then you cannot move the memory around. Things get problematic as application processes grow or shrink. You can't share memory across processes. Paging gets rid of all of this problem by just saying, rather than allocating memory in arbitrary variable size chunks, which is what contiguous memory allocation does, let's allocate memory in fixed size chunks. Okay? And that chunk will be referred to as a page or a frame. Okay? That is fixed. It's set by the hardware. Most of hardware will use a chunk or a page size of 4 kilobytes. So memory manager is allocating memory in granularity or multiples of 4K. Okay? And you don't have to keep these chunks contiguously spaced in RAM. You can allocate any 4K chunk from anywhere in your RAM to any process, and you keep track of a table which says where is page I stored in memory. Okay, so this page table does the translation and tells you where in RAM are the various pages of this process. Your CPU, or the code that the CPU runs, generates virtual addresses. Virtual addresses are integers that index the address space of the process from the base, okay, which is assumed to be zero, and then you have to translate that to a physical address. The way you do this is you take the representation of the virtual address and you take and divide it into two parts, the page number and the offset. You use the page number indexed into the page table, you get a frame number. Frame number says where is this page, the ith page stored in memory. So you take a page number and an offset within the page, get a frame number in RAM and an offset within that frame. Okay? That's how things work in as far as page tables and pages are concerned. Okay? We looked at where do you store the page table. Okay, I said you store it in register, that limits the size of the page table. So you want to keep it in memory, because then there are no limits really. You can store arbitrarily large page tables for arbitrary size processes. But then the problem is for every memory reference, you add an additional penalty of looking up the page table. Okay, so each memory reference becomes twice as expensive. That slows down performance. So you want to put in a cache, which is referred to as a TLB, that stores the most frequently accessed page table entries. Okay, so whenever you generate a virtual address, you first look in the TLB saying, is that page table entry actually there in the cache, which is faster than looking up RAM. If so, you are done. Right? If not, you go to look at the page table. So this optimization allows you maximum flexibility without significantly sacrificing performance. Okay? That's sort of a quick recap of paging. Any questions on this before we move on to today's material on segmentation and segmented paging? Okay, so today we are going to talk about another memory management scheme. This is called segmentation. Okay? Paging was designed from the perspective of hardware. Okay? We said hardware, or the operating system really, has to keep track. If you did contiguous memory allocation, you have to keep track of holes, and there is fragmentation, and you want to address all of these issues that the OS must face, the OS memory manager must face. Right? And we designed this nice scheme called paging. Segmentation actually looks at the problem of memory management from the perspective of the user or the compiler. Okay, by user, we really mean the compiler in this case, or the user's view of the program. Okay? So, several times in this course, I said, you look at a process, it has multiple parts. There is what's called a code segment, which stores essentially the code that you write, that is assembly code that the compiler generates from your high-level code. Okay, there's a stack segment. Okay, there's a heap segment. Okay. Stack segment basically keeps track of the context of the process and all the functions and the local variables within the methods and all that. The stack keeps growing downwards. The heap segment is responsible for dynamic storing any object that has been allocated dynamically. Every time you instantiate a class, you do new on something, Okay? The piece of memory that's allocated to that object that's created comes from this segment or this part of the address space. Every time you call a method, okay, and you pass some parameters, bless you, you actually pop those or push those parameters onto the stack. Okay? And when the function returns, you pop those parameters. So you have this implicit view of what a program looks like. Okay, there is some code, or a process looks like rather. There is some code that the process is executing. Okay, and there is some data that the process uses, and this data is stored either on the stack or the heap. Okay, so then the question is, where does this fit in the context of memory management? Okay, and the way you deal with this is using this memory management technique called segmentation. Okay, as the name suggests, basically we assume that any process, okay, has multiple logical segments. The code segment, there's a stack heap. These are not the only segment. There are several others. There's one for global variables. There's one for shared resources and whatnot. Okay? So, but ones that we really care about are code, stack, and heap. Okay? The compiler, okay, now it doesn't generate virtual addresses starting from the base of the program. Okay? Rather, it uses a segment, it addresses a segment and an offset within the segment. So it will generate addresses that say code segment, offset X within the code segment. Okay? The stack segment, offset Y within the stack segment. Okay? This is how code will be generated by the compiler. Okay? You still don't know where the program is going to get loaded in memory when it starts up. So the offsets are still relative to the start of that segment. So you refer to the stack segment and say offset Y is that byte, okay, and so on and so forth. So you basically use virtual addresses, okay, that are segments and segment offsets, okay, and then you have to now allocate memory and deal with memory. Okay. So the question is, what does this give you? What do we lose by using this view of the process? Okay. So let's now look at this one more time. Okay, so if you allocated memory for arbitrary segments within processes, what kinds of problems will you have again?
Fragmentation.
You will have fragmentation. It should be clear that whenever you allocate memory in arbitrary size chunks as opposed to fixed size chunks, you are back to the same problem that we studied in the first lecture on memory management, where you have to basically have arbitrary size chunks that are allocated, and as processes come and go, okay, you are going to get into fragmentation. Okay? So this problem will come back if you use segmentation. Pure segmentation, which is, you have this, so each process in this case has, let's say, this process has three segments, you allocate some RAM for the code segment, you allocate some RAM for the heap segment, you allocate some RAM for the stack segment, each could be a variable size, and in particular arbitrary size. So if you do this, you have fragmentation. Okay? Now this is one issue. Okay? Now the advantage here is that it is much easier to take this view of the memory layout and map it onto the compiler's view of what the program or the process looks like. Okay? So this is how address translation will be done in this scheme. Okay? This is a straight generalization of the technique we looked at when we did contiguous memory allocation. Okay? In the contiguous memory allocation, for each process, okay, there was a base register and a limit register. The base register told you where is this process loaded in RAM, what's the starting address. The limit register said what's the ending address. Okay, and you basically generated relative addresses and you added the base register. Okay. Now you do this for each segment rather than each process, because each segment is contiguously loaded, not a process. Okay. So you will have multiple base and limit registers, one for each segment. Okay, here is, let's say, the base and limit register for the code segment. The base address tells you where is the code segment resident in memory. What's the starting address? The limit register says what's the ending address. Okay, and so on and so forth. One for the stack, one for the heap, and so on. Okay? And the compiler is basically generating addresses of this sort, which says here is the code segment. Okay, we'll just number this segment rather than giving them textual labels like code, heap, and stack. then you just use the segment ID and look up the appropriate entry. Okay, here you look up the second entry. This gives you the excuse me. You look, get the base address here. You take the offset and you add. Okay, and you are done. Okay. Similar technique as contiguous memory allocation, but you do this on a per segment basis rather than a per address space basis. Okay. The limit register is doing what for us? Keeping you from accessing any memory that does not belong to that segment. Okay, if you generate an offset that exceeds the size of the segment, that's a memory error. Okay, when you actually, if you run any C code and you have gotten something called a segmentation fault, that's actually referring to this, that you went beyond the segment's address space. That's what's called as fault, segmentation fault. Okay, because that memory is looking at a segmented view of the process. Okay. So this is the picture to keep in mind for segmentation. Okay. So now the compiler needs to generate addresses whose upper bits refer to the segment ID, okay, and the lower bits refer to an offset within the segment. Okay. And clearly, this can be combined with any dynamic or static relocation scheme, because this is just generalizing the notion of contiguous memory allocation. Okay, so by using base and limit registers, we have done exactly that, that dynamic relocation. Okay? You can load this segment anywhere in memory, you use a base address, and then any time you generate an offset, you add the base address to get a physical address. Okay? So, I already said external fragmentation is a problem. So what do we do? Okay, so one more thing I should mention is you can also use TLBs to optimize segmentation. Okay, just as we had the problem of page tables, you will also have arbitrary size segment tables. It depends on how many segments you have within the process. Okay, this is up to the compiler. Okay, each compiler will generate some number of segments depending on what the code for your process is doing. Okay, this could be up to 10, 12, 15. It varies from process to process. So if you add sufficient number of registers, base and limit registers, you could deal with this by storing the segment table in the base and limit register. But if you don't, then you keep the segment table in memory like the page table and you use TLBs. Okay? Same optimization we did for page tables can be used for segmentation. Okay? So the advantage of this memory management scheme is it corresponds directly with the user's view of what a process looks like and the compiler's view. This is what you assume your process is going to look like. Okay? It has some code, it has some data. Okay? So using this kind of technique maps directly onto this scheme. Okay? But the disadvantage is that you are back to having fragmentation. Okay? If you have variable size segments, then you are going to have problems. So now what can we do to address this? And the solution is to take the advantages of paging and the advantages of segmentation. These are two techniques that we have looked at, and we put them together. Okay. This scheme, which is what we are going to look at now, is called segmented paging. Okay, so what do you think that scheme does? How can you get rid of fragmentation in segment? So let's assume you are given a segmentation scheme. Okay, so a segmentation scheme just says every process has multiple segments, code segment, heap segment, data segment. Each segment can be of variable size, and you allocate a chunk of memory that is appropriate to that segment. Okay, but now you have fragmentation. So what can you do to get rid of fragmentation?
Use fixed
sizes. Okay. You can use fixed size allocation. Okay, this is exactly how we got rid of fragmentation in a contiguous memory scheme. We paged those chunks of memory. Okay. So why not take each segment and chop it up into pages? You will still have your code segment, but the code segment won't be a contiguous chunk of memory. It will be partitioned into pages. Okay. You can take the heap segment, chop it up into fixed size pages. Okay, and the same with the stack segment. Okay, Okay. So you can take the segmented view of a process, but then you take this entire address space of segments and you chop each segment into pages, and then you use a paging scheme to allocate memory to the segments. Okay. This technique is referred to as segmented paging. Okay. So you are taking the segmentation view and you are taking the paging view and you put it together. Okay. So here is basically what it might look like. So you have code segment, heap, stack, you have some shared libraries, this may be local data, this may be constants, global variables. So you could have a number of these segments. Okay. And as is shown, each is a variable size. So what you did is you partitioned or chopped it up into fixed size pages, and then you basically took each of these pages and you assigned it to memory frames. Okay. So this is basically going to get rid of the fragmentation problem. Okay. And yet you have your view of the process, which says a process is not just a collection of pages that we don't know what is there in the pages. There we have meaning assigned to various segments. So you know any page from this segment is going to contain code. You know that any page from this segment is going to contain data. Yeah, and same is true here. This is going to be shared library, which is code. Not only is it code, it's code that's shared across processes. Okay, this library is shared. Okay. So now this is all great, but the scheme that takes virtual addresses and translates to physical addresses is going to get more complicated. Okay, because on the one hand you have all these segment registers and so on. Okay. And on the other hand, you have a page table. Okay. You have to put all of this together. Okay. And your technique is going to look like this. Okay. So you take, the CPU is going to generate virtual addresses. Okay. Now virtual addresses will have three components, not two. Okay. In the previous two schemes, you either had a page number and an offset within the page, or a segment number and an offset within the segment. Okay. Now you actually have three components, which says, I am referring to this segment. This is the pth page within the segment, and that's an offset within that page within that segment. Okay? So you could say, let's say we number the segments 0, 1 and 2. Okay? So you could say segment 0, which is the code segment, and this segment is partitioned into pages. Let's say that's the fifth page. You say, this is the fifth page, and then you, within that page you can have an offset, which is the seventh byte. Okay? So that is essentially what that address is. Okay. So you index segments by giving them numbers and say this is the first segment, you go here. Okay. And then you say this is the page within that segment and then an offset within the page. Okay. There are three components that you have to care about. Okay. That's the first thing. That is what these three things say. Okay. Is that part clear or not? Okay. So the next component is how to take that and translate into a physical address. So first you are going to have a segment table. Okay. That is this. Okay. So what does the segment table tell you? Why do we have a segment table here? A region what? You're right. Keep going. But what is the region it is pointing to? Yes. And you can actually look at the picture and guess.
Which page?
Which page table? Okay. So in the segment table you put, so there is now a page table for each segment. Okay. In the previous scheme there was a page table for the entire process. Okay. Now think of what was address space is now equivalent to a segment. So each segment has its own page table. Okay. So each process will have multiple page table, not one. Okay. So what you have here are essentially pointers to page table. So first you index and say where is the page table for this segment stored. Okay. So if you actually look at the arrow, you look at the segment ID you index here, the base address is actually going to point to the page table. Okay. So now you found the page table for the segment you care about, then you look up the page number within that segment, so you come here and you index the page segment. That tells you which frame this page is stored in. Okay? So then you take the frame number and you take the offset, okay? And then you compute the physical address. Okay? So multiple levels of lookups. Okay? First, because there are segments and each segment has its own page table, you need to first find, depending on which segment you are referring to, where is the page table. Okay? That is stored in the segment table. Okay, so you say this segment, you basically are pointed to the page table, then you look up the page, okay, find the frame, and then you take the frame and the offset, you generate an address. Okay, any questions on this? Okay. So let's do an exercise here. Okay, so the question is, let's assume we have the same example we used last time, memory with 256 addressable words. Okay, page table that is indexing 8 pages. Okay, page size is 32 words, 32 byte pages, 8 logical segments. Okay, your process has up to 8 segments. A page has 8 pages, a page table has 8 pages, which means each segment can have 8 pages. Yeah, and each page can have 32 words. Yeah, and you have memory or RAM size is 256 words. Okay, so first question is how many bits in the physical address? Yeah. Okay, 8 bits. Why is that? Okay, that's good. So, memory size 256. Okay. Memory addresses are going to go from 0 to 255. How many bits do you need to go from 0 to 255? 8 bits. Okay, 2 to the power 8 is 256. Okay, it's 8 bits. How many bits in the virtual address? Okay, thus far, okay, in paging, the size of the physical address and the size of the virtual address were identical, the same number of bits. Okay? Now this is no longer going to be true. Okay? The size of the virtual address is not going to be size, meaning the length or the number of bits may not be the same. It could be, but it doesn't have to. Okay? Let's try to figure this out. How many bits in the virtual address? Yes. Right. Keep going.
Three more for page. Then you need another. Five
for the. That's right. Okay, so let's go back and analyze what I guess I don't know your name,
Andrew.
What Andrew just said. Okay, so he said, so how do you figure out how many bits do you need in the virtual address? Let's ask, what is the virtual address consist of? Okay, so if you look at this picture, it has three parts. It has a segment number, it has a page number, and it has an offset within the page. So you have to figure out how many bits you need for the segment, how many bits you need for the page, and how many bits you need for the offset. Okay? And the information is all here. Okay? It says page table indexes 8 pages. So how many bits do you need? The size of the page table is 8. How many bits do you need to index from 0 to 7? 3. And that's the page table. So for this you need 3 bits. Okay. How many segments can your process have? Eight. That needs another 3 bits. Okay. And then finally the offset. Okay. How large is the page? In this case, 32 bytes, 32 words. Okay. So page offsets can go from 0 to 31. Okay. How many bits do you need for that? So how many bits is that? This is 11 bits. Okay. Important thing to keep in mind. Okay, that in this case, in segmented paging, the virtual address will be 11 bits and we'll translate that to physical addresses that are 8 bits. Okay, is that clear? And this should be clear why that is the case, because in this case, the bits that you reserve for the segment ID is merely used to look up where the page table is. Beyond that, you just throw it away. The only thing you use to generate physical addresses are the page number and the offset. Okay, that's these 8 bits are going to translate to the physical address. These 3 bits are merely telling you where the page table is stored. Okay, they don't actually matter in the end what physical address you generate. Okay, so you will use this 8 bits and you will do something, do the translation. Okay, so it says how many bits in the virtual address, how many bits for segment number, page number, offset. We did that already. How many segment table entries do we need? You need 8. Okay, all that is already there. How many page table entries do we need? You need 8 entries because the page table has 8 pages. Okay, is that clear? Any questions on this? Okay, I did not actually give you a page table and a segment table and say take virtual address X and translate it to a physical address. Okay. The same kind of exercise we did last time. Okay. You can expect even for segmented paging. I haven't actually put an example of that sort here. So you could be given a small segment table and a small page tables or a set of page tables and asked to do the translation. Okay, we will try to do that in the homework. But are there any questions here? So what is happening and how to do it? Okay, so let me talk about sharing. Okay, segments and paging. So what does the segmented view do for us? So what this does is it simplifies sharing of pages. So on the one, what you could do is you could share entire segments across pages. Okay, it is very easy to do. Let's go back to this picture here. Okay, here's a shared library. Let's suppose you are running a Java process. Okay, it's going to load JVM code. Okay, and then you start another Java process, completely independent Java process that also runs JVM code. Both of them need JVM. Okay, so the operating system doesn't have to load 2 copies of the JVM code, okay, into memory. Okay. Instead, it can load it once, okay, and then just make that a shared library and point to it from both of the processes. Okay. This is trivial to do, okay, in this case, because for each of those, since it's a shared library segment, it will have a page table. All you do is you basically point to the same page table from 2 processes because you have the segment table. So here is process 1, process 2 has its own segment table. Both of them, the base register will point to the same thing. Okay. So when you index that segment, you are basically sharing RAM across processes. Okay. So this you can also do in the context of paging. But in the paging, you have to share at the granularity of individual pages because you will have 2 page tables. Both page tables will point to the same frame. Okay. So if your JVM is, let's say, 30 megabytes in size, you have to take thousands of pages and share them across processes because thousands of these entries will have to be duplicated. Here you just have one segment that's completely shared. You load it once, you create a page table for it. So any process that needs to use Java, you basically make the JVM segment point to that frame. You're done. Okay. Same is true if you have a C code, C library, math library. You take any of these libraries, you load it once in RAM. Okay. It has its own page table. And any other process that needs to share it, you create a shared segment saying this is the C library or the math library or the socket library, and then just point to the same page table from the segments. Okay. So these entries are just replicated. They point to this and you are done. So it's very easy to share. You share at much higher granularity of segments rather than pages. You can still share at the granularity of pages by making the pages point to the same frame. Okay, so that flexibility is still there, but you have this added flexibility. Okay, that's one thing. The other thing is you can treat different segments differently. Okay. So here is an example. So these segments do different things. This is the code segment. Okay. Once you load the code segment, these pages are typically not modified. Okay. They are just code that has been generated. You just execute that code. Okay. Here is the heap and the stack segment that actually contains data. Okay. So if you have integer variables or any variable stored there, you assign it a new value, you change the value of that variable. Okay. So these segments can be read or written to. Okay. This segment can only be read. Typically you don't write unless you have re-entrant code, which is a different problem altogether. Okay. Most processes will not modify the code segment. Okay. So you can use this fact to actually improve the protection and the security of your system. Okay. For instance, you can mark this entire segment as read-only. Okay. In the hardware level, you can mark this entire segment as read-only. So that what that does is anytime any process tries to overwrite, even by accident, this code, it will get a trap. You will get a trap for writing to a read-only segment and the process will terminate. Okay. Until recently, this was basically... And then there are other problems. So this is typically done to prevent things like viruses from coming in and then injecting some code into your program that overrides the code segment and whatnot. Okay, so there are many viruses that actually do this. Okay, so if you mark it read only, you cannot modify this code. Okay, but then there are other problems. So there is the heap segment and the stack segment that can be written to. Okay, so a lot of these malicious attacks, what they do is they don't inject code here. Because you can't modify, they actually inject code there. Okay, so you basically can have buffer overflow attack. You're writing, trying to read some value, you actually get some malicious code that's fed into the program. It resides there, and then eventually you go and start executing that code. Okay, so how can you prevent that from happening? Okay, you cannot prevent those segments from being written to, because it's a valid segment, a data segment. So you can actually
prevent them from being executed.
Yes. So the point that you can do is, for these segments, you can turn off the execute bit. Okay. Which means if the hardware actually goes and tries to execute any instruction, that it will get an error saying this was not meant to contain code. The code is in code segments. Only the code segments are marked as read only, but not write and execute. Okay. So this permission bits on the code segments will be read, no write and execute. The permission bits on your data segments will be read, write, but no execute. Okay. So modern hardware actually has this extra feature where the segment table has something called the NX bit. I don't know if any of you have heard of this, but if you search for NX bit, you will see lots of hits, because all modern processors has NX, stands for no execute. Okay. Because they came up with this idea of extending the segment table permissions to add the execute bit, which is essentially an NX bit, it increases protection. Okay. So you can't now inject malicious code that will reside in these two segments and then make the process jump there and start executing it, because that will also give you an error. Okay. So you can do this fine-grained control at a segment basis depending on what is in the segment. And then modern operating system do use that to improve the security of your system as well. So I already said you can do read and write. You can also do execute permission, but that's only for more modern processors. Okay, all processors have the read and write bits for every segment. More modern ones do that for execute as well. Any questions on this? Okay. So I mentioned this already, so I'm going to go through this quickly. It says where are the segment and the page table stored. Okay. So we have the same options available for us: store it in registers, store it in RAM. Okay. Anytime you store anything in registers, access is really, really fast, but you are limited by the number of registers you have on the machine. So if you have very small number of segments in your process, it's okay to put the segment base and limit registers into registers on the machine, or map them to registers on the machine. If you have arbitrary number of segments, example actually had, I think, 5-6 segments. Okay, but then maybe 10-20 segments in your process, depending on how many shared library you're using. Each shared library is a segment. So there may be lots of segments. So the segment table can be of arbitrary size. In this case, it's better to store it in RAM, and then go back to our TLB. So in this case, the TLB will actually store the more commonly used segment table entries. The TLB is also storing the commonly used page table entries. So the most general scheme is store the page table and the segment table both in RAM. And then use TLBs to speed things up. And then you can also use the protection and valid bits on all of these entries. So now we can ask the same question that we asked last time, which is what is the effective memory access? Remember last time we said if you wanted to access, take a memory address and then translate it into physical address, how many memory accesses do you have? If everything is stored in memory, you have you have three times the overhead. One memory access to look up the page table, one memory access to look up page table, segment table, page table, and then to do the actual memory reference. 3x slowdown. Very bad. For any modern processor, a 3x slowdown, your performance is going to really tank. You will not want to use that machine. Fortunately, TLBs are going to help us in this respect. So we will basically assume that the segment table and page table entries are cached in the TLB. So if you have TLB hits for both page table and segment table lookup, we'll do one TLB lookup for the segment table, one TLB lookup for the page table, and then you do one memory access. This is the best case. So 2 TLB plus MA is your best case, which is much much better than 3 MA, because TLB lookups are much faster than page table memory lookups. You could also have TLB misses of arbitrary sorts. So you could have a page table miss, TLB miss, segment table TLB miss, both miss. So there are four different categories here. So you may have a page segment table miss, which means you will have so if you have a miss, you will do a TLB and then you will go to memory. And let's say page table is a hit, then you get that case. Could have the opposite, which is a segment table is a hit but the page table is a miss. This is page table. Now this case, and the last case is both are misses, which is basically you will do TLB plus MA. You will do TLB plus MA. So you have these various scenarios. This is the best case, that's the worst case. These are the middle cases where some lookups are TLB hits and others are TLB hits. So if you have a good TLB, you will probably be in this regime most of the time, and occasionally you will have one of these cases occurring. Is that clear? Any questions on this? Okay, so let me now say something about very large processes and how to deal with them. Okay, so there's something here about a note. You probably have heard that most modern processors are 64-bit. So that's what modern architectures do. When you go from 32-bit processes to 64-bit processes, you relax some of the limits on how much RAM you can have and so on. Most probably, if you buy a laptop or some machine today, you still probably end up with a few gigabytes of RAM. But if you actually look at the physical limit on how much RAM you can put on this machine or how much RAM this processor can address, because it's a 64-bit addresses, you can actually address terabytes of RAM. So you can actually buy servers which are lots and lots of RAM, which allow you to run giant processes that have hundreds of gigabytes of memory address space. So what that tells you is modern processors allow process sizes to be very, very large. Not orders of megabytes, but orders of tens, hundreds of gigabytes. And you are able to address these. So let's take this extreme case of a very large process. It's hundreds of gigabytes in size. Now if you think about the page table for this process, it is also going to be correspondingly very large. Is that clear? And then you will segment this process into multiple segments. Each segment can be arbitrarily large. So if you do SQL, if you actually have processes like this, you have page tables that are large, let's say very large, and segment tables which are also, there could be a large number of segments within each process. So if you use a normal scheme of having a single level page table, you will have a very large page table. And if you and remember that what you do is when you allocate the start of the process, the page table is allocated to have maximum possible size. You may not use all of those entries, but you will actually create a very large page table under the assumption that the process is allowed to grow to that size. So even if you have, let's say, 10 megabyte process that you have just started in RAM, because your processor can address arbitrarily large and it could grow to that size, you have to allocate this extremely large page table. And even though you may not use 99% of the entries in that page table, you have to pre-allocate it. If you had a single level page table. Okay, is that clear what I just said? Yes or no? Okay, so what's the problem then? Is there a problem with doing something like this? You have a lot of addresses. So the assumption is whenever you start a process, it can grow to arbitrary size. OS doesn't know a priori. Okay? So it is possible that you started this process, it could grow to 100 gigabytes in size. It is equally possible you started this process and it will be only 5 megabytes in size. Okay? Since the OS doesn't know, it has to pre-allocate very large page tables because you can grow to that size. Okay? And if you grow, then you start filling up entries of this page table. Okay? But if your process is very, very small, all of this allocated page table is going to be waste because you will only use the first few entries and all of these entries are wasted. They are just pre-allocated because you allocated this large array. Page table is an array. So you pre-allocated this giant array and you are using the 10, maybe 100 entries of that array. All the others are wasted. More importantly, the OS has to do this for every process. You have hundreds of processes in your system, and you have to do this because you don't know what the size of your process is. So now you can clearly see that your OS is going to start wasting a lot of your RAM by pre-allocating giant page tables that are never used, simply because your process can grow to that size, but which it may never make. Only a few processes that really need these heavy duty amounts of RAM will actually grow to that size. So the question is, how can you make the page table itself more efficient by making better use of RAM and not waste a whole lot of RAM by allocating these page tables that are never used fully? This is a problem with modern operating systems, which have gone to 64-bit architecture, which allow you to address very large processes. So the question is, what can we do? So this is a table-based data structure, it's an array. We don't like it because it's wasting space. What other data structures could we use? You could indeed do multiple levels. Okay, so rather than doing this, you have multi-level index structures. Okay, so what does that look like? You have a small page table, let's say have 1,000 entries. And then each of these entry as you fill up points to another block, memory frame or page, that actually points to frames. And this you can create on the fly.
So when you start, you just create this first level, and as the process grows, you actually allocate these pages on the fly and create space for additional entries.
Okay, is that clear? So you basically have a two level, or it could be more than two, multi-level page tables. Okay. We'll come back to this issue when we will do file systems, because you have the same exact same problem with files. When you create a file, the file system and the operating system does not know how large the file is going to be. You have to have a similar data structure that allows the file system to track which disk blocks contain data for the file. Okay, so when you create a file, you could just make it a one byte file, or it could be potentially take up the whole space on your disk, a single file. Okay. And the OS doesn't know, so it cannot create this giant index structures that keep track of where is the first block stored on disk, where is the second block. So all file systems always use multi-level index structures. Okay. And because this was not a problem for memory, because memory was never that large. Okay. You could only address 32 bits. So that wasn't a big deal. Okay, with 64-bit architecture, this is an issue. So memory management schemes and page table organization in particular have begun to use, or one their structure they have begun to use is multi-level page table, just as file systems have done for decades. Okay. This is one organization. Okay, it basically says multiple levels of paging. Okay, are there other ways to do this? Based on your knowledge of data structure. Okay, what other organizations could we use? To do the map, what is a map? How is it implemented? So you could essentially use a map, which is a hash table. Okay, what does a map do? It does a key value lookup. Okay, you used maps, I presume, in the first assignment. Okay, or at least you are familiar with what a map or a hash map is. Okay, so let's say we want to use this organization for a page table. Okay, how does it work? What does the map contain? Contains entries of the page table, that's for sure, but what are the entries? Okay, what's the key and what's the value? Okay, what's there in a page table? You index a page number, it gives you the frame number. Okay, that's what a page table is. It's an index that takes a page number, and it's an array, so you look up that corresponding entry, it tells you the frame number. If you wanted to implement this data structure using a map or a hash table, what would you do? What's the key? Okay, so key is the page number, the frame is the value. Okay, so your hash map, you will just basically the P lookup that we did here. Okay, so we basically looked up P. So you will take the P, you will basically go to a hash table and say what's the corresponding frame number. You do a hash table lookup, the value will come out. Okay, and then you lose that frame number and you will take the offset and you will go look up that frame. Okay. So the advantage of this using a hash table is it can grow arbitrarily large. You don't have to pre-allocate all of the pages like you had to do in a single level page structure. As you create more pages, you add more entries, okay, to the hash map, and the hash map can grow. And just as it grows when you use hash map in any other implementation. Right? So it is like your multi-level organization, more flexible. But the disadvantage, clearly, is that your main memory reference much slower. Okay, because this is a hash map, this is not an index. Index you do constant time lookup. So here, you have to actually traverse to a hash table, do the hash, go look up that entry, Okay, and remember, this is a memory reference. Okay? You are actually executing assembly instructions. So if you say move, so give us a memory address, let's say 1000 into a register, you want that assembly instruction to execute really fast. If you have to look up what is virtual address 1000 and translate to a physical address, and you have to do a hash table lookup to do that, okay, you think about the performance you are going to get. Okay, so you have on the one hand lot of flexibility, okay, but on the other hand you are back to this problem. You will not be 2 or 3 MA, you will be much worse depending on what hash table implementation you have picked. Okay, so how do you get rid of this problem? So on the one hand you want the advantage of having large page tables that are flexible, that grow on demand and what not, but then performance is going to be very bad. What can we do? What trick do we know to improve page table lookups? Use a TLB. Okay, so you do this key value lookups. Okay, every time you do a new lookup, it's very slow, that's okay. You take that key value pair and you stick it into the TLB. TLB is exactly that, it's a cache for the page table. So you use the same TLB, but you insert that entry. Okay? If you do have locality of reference, you will do lots of accesses to this page. Okay? But only the first access actually required you to look up a hash table. All subsequent accesses are TLB hits, and they are going to be 10, maybe hundreds of times faster. Okay, so you can improve performance by using a TLB as usual. Okay. So you might need a larger TLB because you want as few references to the hash table as possible. Okay, so you put a little more TLB entries, that improves your TLB hit rate, okay, and overall performance improves as a result. Okay, so this is what modern operating systems do. Okay, so I'm not going to spend more time on this, but I just thought I should mention that when we have very large page tables, you either use recursion multi-level page tables, okay, or you use hash tables. Okay, this organization, okay, I should mention this, this organization of a page table is actually referred to as an inverted page table. Okay, these are called just normal page table, this is referred as inverted page table. Okay. Similar to inverted index where you used hash table, the organization is called inverted page table. Okay? Okay, so there are some advantages and disadvantages here. So it says advantages is faster process start time of segmented paging. Okay? You can share memory between processes, processes can grow at an individual segment level. Yes, the disadvantage is, okay, context switches are slower, address translation takes longer. Okay, address translation requires multiple lookups here, two lookups. Okay, so it's going to be slower than a pure page table organization. It also says context switches are slower. Okay, why is that? Why should the context switch matter? Let's go back to that picture. Yeah. So there's more stuff to save and restore. There's a segment table and a page table. Very simply, right? So more data structures that you have to save for this process and restore for the new process, the higher the overhead. So you have to do more work. There are all these registers to save. There's all these page tables to save from the TLB if you want to save the TLB state. Okay? And you have to load more stuff. So context switches are going to be slower, not surprisingly. Okay. So let's take the example of, let me do another question here. Okay. If you had segmentation and segmented paging, okay, and the ability to share memory, could you use that to speed up process creation during fork? Okay, you know fork, and you have encountered fork many times now. How can you optimize fork of a process using this memory management scheme? Yep.
Be using, so you just phrase it at a point to the address rather than actually copying it.
Right. So you are creating, you do a fork. What is a fork? It's a clone of that process. Okay, it's going to have the exact same memory content when you start off. Okay, what's the best way to do that? Rather than taking all of this memory and copying it to a new location, why not just create two page tables? Not even page tables, just create segment tables. Okay, that just point to the same page tables, and you have a new process. Okay, that is just pointing to the same memory contents of the parent process. Okay, very efficient. Very fast, nothing to load from disk, right? So Linux actually does this. So this is one of the fastest process creation mechanisms of any operating system. It has a very fast fork thing which basically makes use of this. It just shares the entire segment, no copying, nothing to be done. Okay, that's an advantage. What's the disadvantage of doing this? You created your child process, but now what? Yes.
If you try to execute a program after the fork, it'll overwrite
yeah.
the child and the parent process.
Exactly. So child and the parent can do different things. In the parent, I can set, let's say there's a variable I. I set I to 1. In the child, I get set to something else. Okay? They are both resident in the same page because you just made a clone, you just made the page table, so the variable I is exactly in the same place. Now you have two versions of I. Okay? The page has been overwritten by both the parent and the child. So now what do we do? So this was great at process creation time, but now different both processes are doing different things. They are overriding or trampling different parts of memory. So when the child overrides something, it shouldn't be visible to the parent. Parent is an independent process. Parent still needs to have the old copy of the page. And when the parent modifies something, it shouldn't be visible to the child. The child has the old copy of the page. So what can we do? Any thoughts? There are not much choices, right? There is only one thing you can do. If there is a page and you overwrite it and you need two copies of the page, what can you do?
Copy the page.
You copy the page on demand, okay, not a priori. So pages that are never modified, you will still continue to share. Okay? Pages that you override, you immediately make a copy. Okay, this mechanism, in case you haven't heard of this name, it's called copy and write or COW. Okay? It's an optimization that operating systems use all the time. Okay? For fast sharing, and when the pages diverge, you just make a copy on demand. So rather than taking an entire process and creating a copy a priori, you only copy what is needed and when you need it, not in advance. So if you don't need to modify, both processes are happy sharing the page, they don't modify it, you continue to share it. Anytime you touch a page and you overwrite it, okay, you dynamically create a copy, and then the page tables start diverging. Yeah, the page table for the parent will point to one page, and the page table for that page in the child will point to some other. Okay, so this is effort or copy and write mechanism. Okay. Heavily used optimization in operating system, not just for process creation, I mean, it's used for lots of different things. Okay, whenever you make a copy, this is also referred to as lazy copying, incidentally. Okay, as opposed to eager copying, where you actually make a copy immediately, you be lazy about this, and you only copy when you have to, and when things change. Okay, so many advantages. Okay, the copy and write is not mentioned here, but consider that as an important advantage of using segmentation. Okay, it talks about performance. Okay, as compared to pure paging, I already mentioned performance is going to be different and worse. Okay, is there fragmentation? If you use segmented paging, the problem of external fragmentation goes away again. Okay, but there will be internal fragmentation. Okay, what is internal fragmentation in a segmented paging scheme? How much internal fragmentation can you have? how much internal fragmentation do you have in a pure paging scheme? How much can you waste on an average? Do you have wastage at all? You don't have to waste what? No, assume that you are allocating. Let's just assume that. So how much would you waste? It's still on the fly, but you will still waste something. Okay, paging requires you to allocate memory in granularity of the page size. Okay. If the process does not need memory in granularity of the page size, the OS still has to give it a page. Okay. So if you say, I want 4097 bytes of RAM, I'm going to end up with two pages. If my page size is 4096, I cannot give it one page and one byte. I meaning the OS. It has to actually give it multiples of pages. You always round up to the next multiple of page and you allocate. Okay. So this should tell you that the last page within a process in a paging scheme is always going to have internal fragmentation. If it hadn't requested memory in granularity of pages, the last page is going to waste some memory. Okay, so if you go back to the last class, I said internal fragmentation on an average. Okay, in paging is half a page. Okay, because you waste half of a page on an average. Some processes will waste more, some will waste less. But on an average, half a page per process. Okay, is the internal fragmentation. What is it here in segmentation? Applying the exact same idea now to a segmentation scheme, how much are you going to waste in terms of internal fragmentation? Okay, paging. Let me write this down. Segmented paging. You'll still waste half a page.
Half a page per segment?
So you'll waste half a page per segment, per process. Right, because each segment is paged. Each segment behaves exactly like process behaved in the old scheme. So if the code segment wants 4097 bytes, two pages. Right? Data segment wants 4097 bytes, two segments. Each segment you will waste up to half a page. Okay. So here internal segmentation is half page per segment in the process. Okay. And then you do multiply that by the number of segments in the process, that gives you the total internal fragmentation. Yes.
But how much is that mitigated by shared code?
How much is that mitigated? Yes. So if you have shared libraries, you will, for that segment, you will amortize the wastage across shared. But only for shared code. For rest of it, you will not have that benefit. Okay. Now, I should mention that this is not, in the larger scheme of things, this is not a big deal. Okay. If you have 2 gig of RAM, do you really care about 2 kilobytes of wastage per segment? You don't care. Okay. But you should know that there is some internal fragmentation. Okay. External fragmentation, we care about. Internal fragmentation is noise. We don't really care. Okay. Yes?
Yeah. Using
another half a page per level. In the multi-level?
Yeah.
So this is the page table. Okay, then these point to actual processes. Okay. So processes will still have that half page wasted in the end. That doesn't increase or decrease based on the organization of the page table. That only depends on what is actually allocated to the process. Okay. All right. So this is where we are going to stop for. I talked about inverted page tables already. So this is basically going to be the end of the discussion on segmentation. Next time we are going to resume the discussion, we'll talk about demand paging. Okay? So have a good spring break. If you are leaving town, keep an eye on the next programming assignment that I'll put up well in advance tomorrow. Okay? But we'll talk about that a week from Tuesday.